These instructions are basically the instructions or the guidance or the principles or the cardinal foundations of what type of world you should try to live in. A world in which tattva, you're guided by truth, not lies. A world in which you try to, or we all try to, inculcate behavior, qualities, attitudes that reflect the best way of living. This is sadhachara. A life, a world in which we're always doing selfless things. It should not just become about us, us and us, but we should be going out and giving, because by thinking of others, we find ourselves. And Tirtha, we should build a world in which we are regularly interacting with the connection points to eternity. And there are three types of Tirtha. Anyone remember? Can anyone say what the three type or one of the types of Tirtha? Yeah.
Envisioned.
Envisioned Tirtha, what is that?
So that's where, by the mercy of a devotee, they're able to create a holy place.
Right, by the mercy of a devotee, by their vision, they can create a holy place. Another type of Tirtha? Earthly Tirtha, yes. Roma Vrindavan, we can travel there. And this is Krishna's own abode, which has descended to this world.
And within the heart
of the pure devotee, there are walking places of pilgrimage. So, anyone who comes in contact with them feels immediately as though they are seeing through the eyes of that person the eternal spiritual vision of eternity. So yes, let us always in our life be close to these three things, these three tirthas. And now today we're going to talk about the final thing, which is vairagya. Vairagya, sometimes people think, is just for a few people. Those who decide to live a life of renunciation. But actually, Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Mahaprabhu Bhakta Ganer Vairagya Pradhan. That the very life of all devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Vairagya, renunciation. So how does that relate to each one of us? Why is Vairagya so important? What is Vairagya? That is what we're going to discuss today, session number 6. Yesterday we were hearing about the Bhagavatam, and the Bhagavatam is not just 18,000 verses, but the Bhagavatam is a set of teachings about the Supreme Lord. And the Bhagavatam was spoken many, many times. And the first telling of the Bhagavatam, or the first recitation of the Bhagavatam, does anyone know who it was between? I don't have a guess. What was the first recitation of the Bhagavatam? Who was it between?
Krishna and Brahma.
Krishna and Brahma, yes. Brahma is the creator. So right when the universe is created, then Brahma is in the universe, he's kind of not sure what he's supposed to do. He's having like an existential crisis. And then he hears the word, tapa, tapa, sutapa. No, he heard the word tapa, which means austerity. So he realized, oh my God, I've got to do austerity. Unless I do austerity, I won't be able to understand who I am, what my purpose is, what I'm supposed to be doing. So he did tapa, and then Krishna appeared. And then, Dene Brahmare Darya Adhikavaye Muryanti Yat Surayaha. Within the heart of Brahma, Krishna imparted all of the knowledge of the Bhagavatam in just 4 verses. This is known as Chatushloki Bhagavatam. Yeah. The whole Bhagavatam in 4 verses. We may sometimes wish, why isn't our Bhagavatam 4 verses? Krishna, 4 verses, finish the whole thing. And this is the final verse of the 4. Naveen Krishna Prabhu is writing a book on the Chatushloki Bhagavatam. So let's all pray that comes out, because it explains very things very, very nicely. But this is the final verse of the 4. And look at the very final instruction that Krishna gives to Brahma, and I'm going to ask you what you understand from it. Etavad eva jigyasam tatva jigyasunatmanaha anvaya vyatireka bhyam yatsyat sarvatra sarvada. This is the final instruction that Krishna gives to Brahma. A person who is searching after the Supreme Absolute Truth, put your hand up if you're searching after the Supreme Absolute Truth. Okay, it's relevant. It's relevant. The personality of Godhead. That person must certainly search for it up to this. In all circumstances, in all space and time, and both directly and indirectly. Okay? So if you want to find Krishna, if you really want to see Krishna, as George Harrison said, then you got to look for Krishna in all circumstances. Okay, that makes sense. You got to look for Krishna in all time and space. Okay, that makes sense. You got to look for Krishna directly. That makes sense. But Krishna says to Brahma, you have to also look for Krishna indirectly. Now, does anyone have any reflection on that? What does it mean to look for Krishna indirectly? Harsh, don't put your hand up. Yeah, I'm sure.
Is it to not just search for this classical, but everywhere you go, everywhere you look, you try to see Krishna through his devotees, just through everything else in the world?
Okay, so you're saying to look for Krishna directly means Krishna in the deity form, or Krishna who we can perceive in his personal form, but indirectly means look for Krishna in everything, everywhere. Not necessarily where his direct form is. Very good. Someone else here?
Is it just like looking for Krishna's hand behind everything?
Look for Krishna's hand, yeah. Once a devotee was asked, have you seen Krishna? So I haven't seen Krishna's face, but I see his hands every day. So yeah, see Krishna's hand behind everything. Yeah.
Why, like, Krishna conscious principles is the way you behave outside, say, a temple environment, say, you're what? Like, in my principles, you might not necessarily be, you know, reciting the Shiva temple conscious, but can you, like, invite?
So even when you're at work, or when you're at school, or whatever, university, even if you're in a place where it's not a Krishna conscious environment, try to bring in the principles, try to connect. Good. Yeah.
In the actions that you do for others?
In the actions that you do for others, not just finding Krishna directly, serving Krishna directly, but serving Krishna indirectly by those who are connected to Krishna. Good point. There's still one more thing that the acharyas... These are all correct, but there's one specific thing that acharyas say is meant here by searching for Krishna indirectly. Anyone want to hazard a guess?
I'm only guessing it because you're talking about renunciation. But is it renunciation?
Yeah, but you have to say why.
I think if the more we're in contact with, like, these material desires or material modes, and engage ourselves in those kinds of activities with those people, we don't make big progress. But if we spiritualize those things, then we are able to make more progress. So it's a little more indirect than direct.
Yeah. Yeah, these things are true. Basically, we need to, in our life, if we want to find Krishna, we have to try to find Krishna directly. There are many things which directly connect you to Krishna, isn't it? All these things we've been discussing this week. What does tattva do? It's positive knowledge of Krishna. It connects you to Krishna. What does seva do? It connects you to Krishna. What does good behavior do? It connects you to Krishna. What does being in a tirtha do? It directly connects you to Krishna. All these things directly connect you to Krishna, and therefore, anyone who's searching for the Lord, they should take advantage of these things. But they should also search for Krishna indirectly, which means there are certain things which take you to Krishna, and certain things which take you away from Krishna. And to search indirectly for Krishna means to also give up those things that take you away from Krishna. And this is the way in which one of the understandings come of what Krishna has said to Brahma. If the direct way is always to remember Krishna, then what is the indirect way? Never forget him. If the direct way to Krishna is to become spiritually attached to Krishna, then what's the indirect way? Okay, great. It's going to get harder. If the direct way to Krishna is niyama, things you should do, then what's the indirect way?
Yama.
Yama, yes, which means things you shouldn't do. And if the direct way is anukul yasya sankalpa, as Bhaktivinoda Thakura says, to accept everything which is favorable, what is the indirect way? Rejecting, which in Bengali is? Pratikul yasya varjanam. What often happens is that people think the first column is really, really important, which it really, really is. But what often happens is the other column is sometimes neglected. If you do everything in column one, but you don't do the things in column two, then you may find that your spiritual journey doesn't go as quick as you would like it to go. Did you know in a relationship, what you don't say is as important as what you say? Think about that for a second. What you don't say can often hurt someone more than what you do say. Did you ever think about how in a relationship, what you don't do might affect the relationship as much, if not more, than what you do do? In our relationship with Krishna, it's not just about what we do, but it's about giving up things which distance us in that relationship. And in this way, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told the Goswamis, Vairagya Shikshan, teach people what they need to let go of, right? We need to let go of certain things. We need to disconnect from certain things, because if we don't disconnect from certain things, then we won't really be able to connect fully to Krishna. And therefore, in order to experience the totality of rasa, one must imbibe vairagya. It's very interesting, if you look at the Gita, then the Gita is split into three. Many of you may know this. And the middle six chapters are all about what?
Bhakti.
Bhakti is the essence. So someone may say, if Krishna has given the essence in the middle of the Gita, the Bhakti chapters, he's already told Arjuna what the essence of it all is, why does he speak another six chapters at the end? Anyone want to say? Why doesn't the Gita finish in the middle six chapters where Krishna has given the essence of what the goal of life is? Why does he speak another six chapters at the end after giving the highest knowledge? Yes?
To even start to recognize what qualities we have within us which are not good that we should try to work, get rid of.
So to give, you're saying to give supporting knowledge which will help one to actually awaken that bhakti?
Yeah, that, and also like sometimes like looking at the divine and the demoniac, you might not realize that you have those demoniac qualities within you. So it allows you to recognize, because you might think, oh, I'm a great person, but when you read those things, you're like, oh, yeah, I've got this demon, I've got this demon, and things like that. I need to disconnect from that and in order to make progress.
Yeah, a few Pulambasuras and Dainakasuras are lurking. I think there's one behind you, Yuvna. No, I'm not going to finish. Yes, they're lurking. So the idea is that the last six chapters of the Gita, what they do is they help us to navigate this world. And the difficulty of this world is that while we're living in this world, we get very easily attached. But I even noticed, I've been sitting here for maybe 5 or 6 days, and I can see that people tend to even get attached to the place where they sit in the room. Right? It's interesting, right? Attachment comes so naturally to us, we become attached very, very quickly. So Krishna gives the last 6 chapters of the Gita, the final things, which is all about how to detach from the world, detach from all these bad things, which then helps you attach to Krishna. Even if you look at the Bhagavatam, there's 12 cantos. What is the essence of the Bhagavatam? Which canto is the essence of it? Or the
10.
Right? It's all about Krishna. But then why doesn't the Bhagavatam end at 10? There's an 11 and a 12. And why is the 11 and 12 there? Because Krishna is giving further instructions to Uddhava. He's giving further instructions in the 12th canto about Kali Yuga and talking about how you need to detach yourself from this world. Because unless you understand about detachment, you can never really attach to Krishna. So we have to let go. So just like Krishna's final chapters in the Gita are about letting go, just as in the Bhagavatam, the final cantos are about letting go. When Mahaprabhu gives instructions to the Goswamis, then the final instruction is teach people how to let go. Because until you let go, you will never be able to grasp. Right? Just like the Astavakra Muni, they asked him, how can you tell us the nature of illusion? So then he ran out into the courtyard and he grabbed hold of a tree. And he said, let me go, let me go, let me go. He said, this is illusion. We're hanging on to so many things in the world and we're praying, let me go, but we're hanging on. It's us hanging on. So we need to let go. So then my question to you will be, in order to experience the totality of rasa, what do we have to let go of? Any ideas? What do you think? What is it we have to experience via rasa?
Expectations.
Expectations. So do you think we should have no expectations in spiritual life? Or do you think certain expectations are good, certain expectations are bad?
Yes. But you can be ambitious. But if you keep them moderate, then you won't be disappointed.
Yeah. So yeah, certain expectations that we become attached to, we have to let go of them, otherwise we will become disappointed. Anything else? What else do we have to let go of, Sean?
Desire for control.
Desire for control. Yeah, when you're in this world, the desire for control. Once I was on a plane from Heathrow, it was a Qatar Airways from Mumbai to Heathrow, and we were flying over the Middle East, and then the plane started shaking. So it was a bad one, and then can everyone go back to their seats? We're experiencing some turbulence. It's one of those. So the first thing that happens when you do that is you look at the stewards, and if they look scared, you better start getting scared. So they look a bit alarmed, and I thought, oh my God, this is bad. And then the plane just went whoop. And everyone was like, you know what everyone did when the plane went down like that? Everyone went like this. And they caught hold of the chair. Which, if you think about it, is absolutely useless. The plane's going down, my friend. And the chair's going down as well. Well, we tried to control, isn't it? So it was a shocking experience. It was when the plane went down, the first thing I did is I looked onto the screen, and because they have the cameras. So I thought, let me see what's underneath, So I turned, clicked it to that screen, and it was underneath all the mountains. Then I flipped to the next screen, where are we? Because they have the map and then the plane. And then I flipped onto that screen and it was like, Kandahar, Afghanistan. So I can really let go now, So we have this tendency to want to control, what else do we have to let go of?
Any bad qualities that we recognise within our own character and behaviour.
negative qualities, negative attitudes, negative traits. What else do you have in the code?
Letting the material things affect our character, having them. I'm not the one that having a bit more team at the second video, like what you have actually.
Okay, so that's related to attitude and how we process things, yeah? Yeah, you have to let go of certain people. Naturally.
I guess your identities that you have and put your servant of Krishna identity in the forefront.
Yeah, all these are the identities that we build up over time, and you have to kind of let go of those. Yeah, so many things we have to let go of, all of these things. Yeah, places that are not beneficial, people that are not beneficial, habits, situations, attitudes, character traits. When we begin to look at this, we realize why our spiritual life may not be going as fast as it can be going. Because directly we may be doing many things for Krishna, but are we searching for Krishna indirectly? Are we ready to do all the indirect things that will support the direct things? Remember, what you don't do is often more powerful than what you do. The Goswamis were amazing because they were ready to just walk away. They were ready to walk away from anything that wasn't beneficial to their cultivation of spiritual life. Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami were in the Muslim occupational government. They had the highest posts. But they were ready to walk away from it all. Dhyatva Dhranama Shesha Mandalapati Shrinim Sadakuchava. They had everything. They had money, they had power, they had influence, they had comfort. Tuchavat, but they thought, this is all, what is this? It's nothing. It's so small, it's so insignificant. I'll let it go, and I'll search for something much deeper. Yeah, Raghunath Das Goswami was, in today's terms, a billionaire. But he was ready to walk away. Gopinda Kantashrido, he was ready to give it all up, and just wear a loincloth, and sleep under a different tree every single day. Ready to just walk away. So all of these personalities, they show us through their lives that they were ready to let go. As we kind of conclude this retreat, we're kind of thinking about how we need to change our life. Someone said to me, you know, like, I never go away from a retreat the same person. I always go away 5 kgs heavier. The start of that statement sounded very promising, but of course, it's not bad to go home 5 kgs heavier, filled with prasadam, Krishna's mercy. But we also want to go away with something different, and therefore we have to seriously think. This would be a longer exercise if we had longer time, but I'm just going to plant it with you. Maybe you can picture it in your mind, and at some point when you have the time and space, and to actually deeply think about this. We have to let go of certain things in our life. There are things which are not good for spiritual life that you have to let go of. And for some of you, some things you just effortlessly be able to let go of. Like, when I came to the Krishna Consciousness Movement, they said, no gambling. No gambling. I was like, yeah, that's fine. You know, I've never gambled in my life, so it wasn't like a big thing, right? So there are certain things which are just easy for you to let go of. There are other things in your life which you know are not good for Krishna Consciousness, are not good for your spiritual journey. And that if someone explains it to you, sits you down and tells you, then okay, you can give it up. It's not such a big deal. You can do it. And you do it after being explained to. However, 3 and 4 are the ones I want you to think about. There are certain things in your life which are maybe blocking your spiritual progress that you know I need to let go of this. Maybe it's people, maybe it's places, maybe it's a certain situation you're in. But for some reason, by the arrangement of nature, you can't let go of it. You can't just walk away from it. You can't just leave it. You can't just wake up tomorrow and say, I don't want this. I'm going to walk away. You can't. Because the situation is such that you have to continue interacting with that thing. And there are certain things in our life that we know we need to get rid of, but that we don't want to get rid of. That we don't want to let go of. 1 and 2 are fine, but 3 and 4 are a danger zone. I'm just going to ask you for literally 2 minutes just to turn to the person next to you and maybe share anything that you think would come in box number 3 or 4. Is there anything you can't let go of and is an obstacle to your spiritual progress? And are there things that you don't want to let go of, that you know are destructive, that you know are holding you back, but somehow or other, you can't muster up the determination within yourself to let go of? Okay, so just for a few minutes, just do that. Just speak to the person next to you, and then we'll do some discussion. So, we've only got 15 minutes left, so I'm just going to be very, very quick. And then I'm just going to kind of open it up for Q&A, and then we're going to wrap up. Unfortunately, time is short this morning. This is a longer exercise. You can do it. It's very powerful, actually. But can some of the, just very quickly, just shout out some of the things that came up for box number 3. It could be anything, even if it's not your personal example. Just anything.
Past experiences.
You can't. You just practically can't give it up. Okay. Yeah. Nice clothes? Is that 3 or 4?
4.
Yeah. Okay, 3. I'm asking for 3, yeah?
Depression.
Okay?
Any sort of addiction?
Addiction.
Yeah.
Responsibilities sometimes?
Responsibilities. You can't just walk away from things, yeah.
Time on social media?
Is that 3? Okay, so this is interesting. Just wait and see in a second. Yeah.
I guess that's responsibility, like a job.
A job, okay.
Trauma.
Trauma. Yeah, Radhik. Parental expectations. Yeah. Alright. Now tell me some of the things that come in 4.
Association?
You mean that bad association?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, fine. Yeah, good point, definitely. Yeah, Tej.
A feeling that might not be real. So you find comfort in something.
Okay, okay, yeah, okay, I got it.
Might not be real.
Okay, yeah.
Your ego and attitude?
Your ego and
attitude.
Lifestyle,
your current way of living.
Sense desire.
Sense desires, sense gratification. Yeah,
watching TV.
The need to control situation. Yeah, my God, this is turning into like an alcoholic. I mean, there could be many things. So it's very interesting. The first thing is when you do this exercise, if you would do it very, very closely, consider many of the things we put in box number 3, which is things I can't get rid of, things I can't let go, things it's in my life, I'm stuck with it. Do they actually need to be in box number 3? sometimes we psychologically convince ourselves that there's certain blocks in my life that I can't overcome. There's certain things I can't let go of. They just are in my life. And we put them in the circle of concern, but not in the circle of influence. But let me first share with you, when you look closely and you do this exercise, you'll see that oftentimes we disempower ourselves by saying that there's certain things I can't let go of, I can't change, I can't do, and we put it in box number 3, when actually, we don't want to get rid of it. And that will need to be unpacked, but we are in a time limit. Now here's another interesting psychology. When you look at your spiritual life and you think, I want to be more Christian conscious, I want to advance more, but these are the problems. Do you tend to focus more on the things that are in box number 3 or the things that are in box number 4? Who would say that generally they focus more on the things in box number 3 to justify why they can't advance in spiritual life?
A good number.
What do you think is more dangerous? The stuff in number 3 or the stuff in number 4?
4.
Not, I'm saying the stuff that's genuinely meant to be in box number 3. Not the things that you put in box number 3, the things that are genuinely meant to be in box number 3. Do you think they're actually dangerous for your spiritual life?
No.
They're not. Vrindavan says they're not. So Vrindavan, tell us, why are the things in number 3 that we think are stopping us from spiritual life, why are they not actually a block to our spiritual life?
If it, in my head, if it's something you really can't change, then you've got to solve other things around it, which you can change, which seems like it's box number 4.
And if you really can't change it, what does it mean?
Krishna
wants it to be there. And if Krishna is the supreme controller and he's your best friend, then why is he going to put you in a situation, box you into number 3, and that's going to be a block? It can't be a block. But it's interesting that sometimes we look at all of these things and we think, this is the reason. It's not me. It's my situation. It's the people around me. It's the place I'm boxed into which is blocking me. We are disempowering ourselves because of our own attitude and mentality. Now, here are some reflections on box number 3. Let's take a popular one like association. Say, for example, you're surrounded by people who are not beneficial to your spiritual journey, and you feel that if I only I could walk away from this, distance myself from this, I would advance so much more. But you can't. You can't walk away. It's in box number 3. You can't change it. What do you think some positive ways to see those things would be? Can anyone think?
Asking yourself why Krishna has put me in this situation.
Yeah. Asking yourself, why has Krishna, what am I supposed to learn from this? What can I get from this situation which I want to let go of, but I can't let go of, and therefore I have to live with? What can I learn from it? Good. Anything else? What would be a progressive way to deal with those things? Yeah.
Even though their activities may not align with yours, they may have like qualities in them that which you can learn from.
Brilliant. In that unfavorable situation, why you're focused on all the unfavorable things that you perceive happening in your life in that situation or whatever it may be, can you also find other good things that are coming? Because maybe there are a lot of other good things that are being contributed to your spiritual life, maybe that you don't even know about. Yeah? So, is there a way to favorably engage this? This is also another point. We take a situation as it is, but it's not that a situation cannot be adjusted and used in a favorable way if you're ingenious and enthused and motivated enough to change it. But often we're not motivated, we just surrender. This is bad, and it's bad, and I'm bad, and everything's bad, and this is going to be bad, and what to do? Life is bad. Right? But if you start thinking ingeniously, you can change it around. Is this so-called unfavorable thing giving me something favorable? Can unfavorable things become favorable over time? You may think this is a terrible thing right now, but down the line, that very thing could change. The point I'm trying to make here is there's certain things in your life you can't let go of, you can't change genuinely. Don't be deflated. Don't worry. It's not a block. Just learn how to deal with those things appropriately. And then, for the things in box number 4, if you know, and this is a question every single person has to genuinely ask themselves, if you know what you need to let go of that's blocking your spiritual journey, what are you doing about it? What plan do you have? If someone says, my pride is what I need to let go of because my pride is just always holding me back. And so what's your plan? What are you going to do to become humble? What are you going to do to overcome your pride? Do you have a plan? Have you tried different things? Or is it just like one day we think it will happen? No, we have to make a plan. So when we look at all the things in box number 4, then ask yourself, what is my plan to overcome these things? And you know what? It's not the plan that helps you to overcome it. But it's the plan that you try to make and genuinely follow that Krishna sees. And when Krishna sees you have a plan, and when Krishna sees that you're enthusiastic to try, then it's Krishna that will ultimately come and give you the strength to deal with those things. But it's got to begin with a plan. So essentially, what I'm trying to share with you, I'm doing this very, very quickly because of short time, and please take this away and try and do it in your own time. The Goswamis walked away from everything. And they were ready to embrace a new life. And they were ready to let go of that which did not facilitate their journey forward. Let us think deeply about this. Because you must be willing to give up what you are at the moment in order to become what you can, should, and want to be. Right? Unless we're willing to give up our current personality, our current way of functioning, our current attitude, our current qualities, and unless we have a plan and a real desire to do that, we'll never really become what we can and should be. And so in this very, very short time, I'm just trying to share with you a principle of Vairagya, which is for each and every devotee, because each of us have certain things we have to let go of and certain things we have to give up. And focusing on those things will energize your journey just as much as the positive things that directly connect you to Krishna. So, when is the time now? Because you're supposed to finish at 10, right? About 2. Okay. Someone's got a question. You've got 2 minutes. Okay, yeah, question.
My question is regards to when we sometimes think about certain things, like certain situations, which we know that we don't want to let go of. Sometimes we just somehow manage to convince ourselves that it's not that we don't want to go of it, we just want to let go of it. How can you then train your mind to distinguish between the two? Because then you're in denial.
Yeah, very good point. So how about when we've convinced ourselves that it's in box number 3, when actually it's in box number 4, But we're not willing to see that, and we're not willing to acknowledge that. And that's why you need very good friends around you. Because it's difficult to see the picture when you're inside the frame. And that's why Vaishnav life is never done in isolation. Some things you can do through introspection, but a lot of the things, we don't have the power of that type of introspection to come to a conclusion, so we need another devotee to tell us. And so, I thought about this a lot in my spiritual life, and I thought, actually, you know, the greatest wealth that you have in your spiritual life is your friends. Because if you have people in... and you know who is a real friend? Rupa Goswami explains who's a real friend. He says, Sajatiya, they're like-minded. You're on the same wavelength as them. They know you, they get you, they understand you. Not only that, number two, he says, Snehasya, someone who cares for you, someone who loves you, someone who actually has the heart that you should succeed. But not just that. Third point, he says, Ashraya, one who actually has spiritual advancement so that they're able to see and give you advice that you need. Now, in our life, sometimes we have friends who know us and love us, but who don't have the spiritual vision to help us. Sometimes there may be many people around you who have the spiritual vision to help you, but maybe they don't know you. And maybe there are many people who love you, but they're lacking in other qualities. If you somehow can find people in your life who know you, love you, and can actually help you, then by their assistance, in absence of our own inability to realize what our block is, they're the ones that can actually help. And so, you know, like coming on a retreat like this is a lot, and it's fun, and it's many, many things. But the greatest thing that you get in a retreat like this is you make relationships. And those relationships will stand as your strongest asset. So, maybe that's where we have to end on this trip, because time is going, and perhaps that is a good place to end. Because Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, Durgame Patimaintasya Skalat Pada Gadir Muhu Svakripa Yastidaneina Shanta Shantva Valamvanam. He says, my path in life is very, very difficult. He says, my path is difficult and I'm slipping again and again. But the stick of the mercy of the devotees is what is holding me up. And so, I think the sangha that you have, the support that you have, the friends that you have, and this association of Pandava Sena is the greatest asset. And I think if we remain like this, in this association, and not just remain, but establish deeper relationships, then spiritual life will really flourish, and Krishna will reveal everything he needs to reveal through the devotees. Okay. So I guess we have to end because time moves on. And we're going back to the manor today. Such is life. I just wanted to say thank you to everyone. It's been amazing. It's been the first time on a Pandava Sena retreat after many, many years, and I was very happy to reconnect. Firstly, with like many old friends, like Raveen Krishnapuru, Neelamani Mataji, Krishna Avatar, Vrindavan, Nitai Kirtan, Suchi Rani, all of these devotees really, they helped me so much in my spiritual life, and it was so nice to reconnect with all of them, and so nice to see all of you. I think it's amazing. I think Pallava Sena is going to continue to do bigger and better things. And yeah, it's just so inspiring to see your depth of desire to be Krishna conscious and your dynamism in reaching out and doing something amazing to change the world. I think Pallava Sena is perhaps, yeah, amongst the most dynamic groups I've ever seen. I feel very fortunate that I took my birth in Pallava Sena. And I have so much gratitude and appreciation and debt to Pallava Sena. So I was happy to do a little bit of a service for all of you. And yeah, I really appreciate each one of you. And yeah, pray to be with you all again very soon, somewhere, somewhere. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hey Rama, Hey Rama, Rama Rama, Hey
Hare. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.